Good morning. First Samuel 21 and 22 have a connection to Psalm 52. If you look at Psalm 52, what it says there is, after the events that happened with Doeg, the Edomite, that's when David writes Psalm 52. So let's look a little bit at what happens in 1 Samuel 21 and 22, and then we'll go look at Psalm 52. Here in 1 Samuel 21 and 22, we'll start with the first 9 verses of chapter 21. Then David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came trembling to meet David and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has commissioned me with a matter and has said to me, 'Let no one know anything about the matter on which I am sending you and with which I have commissioned you, and I have directed the young men to a certain place. Now, therefore, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever can be found.'" The priest answered David and said, "There is no ordinary bread on hand, but there is consecrated bread, if only the young men have kept themselves from women." David answered the priest and said to him, "Surely women have been kept from us as previously when I set out, and the vessels of the young men were holy, though it is an ordinary journey. How much more than today will their vessels be holy?" So the priest gave him consecrated bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which was removed from before Yahweh in order to put hot bread in its place when it was taken away. Now one of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before Yahweh, and his name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's shepherds. David said to Ahimelech, "Now is there not a spear or sword on hand? For I brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's matter was urgent." Then the priest said, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, behold, it is wrapped in cloth behind the ephod. If you would take it for yourself, take it, for there is no other except it here." And David said, "There is none like it. Give it to me." And so David moves on. So first off, in these first 9 verses, we see that Ahimelech helps David based on a false pretext, right? David has lied to the priest of God. He has been deceptive about what is going on here. He says he's doing something for Saul, when all it is that he's run from Saul because Saul is trying to kill him. And so Ahimelech helps him based on false pretense. If you turn over to chapter 22, then we're going to look at verses 6 through 8. Saul heard that David and the men who were with him had been discovered. Now Saul was sitting in Gibeah under the tamarisk tree on the height with his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing around him. Saul said to his servants who stood around him, "Hear now, O Benjamites, will the son of Jesse also give to all of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds? For all of you have conspired against me, so that there is no one who discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. And there is none of you who is sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in ambush as it is this day." Saul is completely paranoid. Completely paranoid. And here we actually see there's a connection between David and Saul right here. The title of this lesson is "God is Our Refuge." And right now, he is neither David nor Saul's refuge. Because David felt like he had to speak to Ahimelech deceptively. He had to lie to the priest of God. It's bad enough to lie, but to lie to the priest of God is already bad enough. And Saul is completely paranoid. Here, God is not his refuge either. He sees enemies all around him. And he even says that to his men. It's one thing to think it. It's another thing to say it to all of your trusted servants. "I know you're all conspiring against me." That's a way to get everybody to conspire against you. It's to get them to think you already believe it, so why not? The sad thing is no one has conspired against David. Or against Saul. Saul is completely in Saul's mind. The one person that's coming for Saul is God himself. And there's nothing that's going to stop that. Let's look at verses 9 and 10 now. Then Doeg, the Edomite who was standing by the servants of Saul, said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub. He inquired of Yahweh for him, gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. So Doeg reveals David's whereabouts. And also, we see that he does make some assumptions. He knows that Goliath, the sword of Goliath, was given to David. He would have had to see that. But it says he inquired of Yahweh for him. We don't know if that's actually true. That's never stated in the previous chapter. And perhaps God would have let Ahimelech know what's going on if that was the case. And then if you look at 11 through 15, then the king sent someone to summon Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's household. The priests who were in Nob, and all of them came to the king. Saul said, listen now, son of Ahitub. And he answered, here I am, my lord. Saul then said to him, why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me in that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him so that he would rise up against me by lying in ambush as it is this day? How does he know that? Has the ambush been sprung yet? He doesn't know there's an ambush waiting for him. He's just assumed. Ahimelech answered the king and said, and who among all your servants is as faithful as David, even the king's son-in-law, who is captain over your guard and is honored in your house? Did I just begin to inquire of God for him today? Far be it from me. Do not let the king impute anything to his servant or to any of the household of my father, for your servant knows nothing at all of this whole affair. What are you talking about? As he addresses Ahimelech, what are you talking about? Of course I've inquired of God for David. He's your most trusted servant. Now remember, what does Ahimelech think? David's here working for Saul. So now Saul comes to him angry. I'd be just as confused as Ahimelech. And then in verses 16 through 19, if you want to know whether or not God is certainly Saul's refuge, if you haven't figured it out yet, the king said, you shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's household. The king said to the guards who were attending him, turn around and put the priests of Yahweh to death. Do you hear that? Put his priests to death. He knows exactly who these people are. Because their hand also is with David, and because they knew that he was fleeing and did not reveal it to me. But the servants of the king were not willing to put forth their hands to attack the priests of Yahweh, a wise choice. The king said to Doeg, you turn around and attack the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned around and attacked the priests, and he killed that day 85 men who wore the linen ephod. And he struck Nob, the city of the priests, with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and infants, also oxen, donkeys, and sheep he struck with the edge of the sword. We're going to keep reading. Let's look at what David is told. One son of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of Yahweh. David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, I have brought about the death of every person in your father's household. Stay with me, do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks your life, for you are safe with me. So this is the setup for Psalm 52. And so David knows exactly what has happened, and he understands his part that he plays in this event. So let's turn over to Psalm 52 now. It says, for the choir director, a maskil of David, when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul and said to him, David has come to the house of Ahimelech. So let's see what David has to say here. Verse 1, why do you boast in evil, O mighty man? The loving kindness of God endures all day long. So let's remember what we're talking about here. He's going to talk about boasting in evil versus boasting in the loving kindness of God. Certainly far more than what either Doeg or Saul has done to this point. Verses 2 through 4. Your tongue devises destruction, like a sharp razor, O worker of deceit. You love evil more than good, falsehood more than speaking what is right. You love all words that devour, O deceitful tongue. And I'm going to assume here that as he talks about this deception here, how it devours and destroys everything around him, I think he's speaking to Doeg here. But I wonder if there's a small part that's speaking to himself. Because he is the one that was the deceptive one. And he, as he admitted before, he has a part to play. Look at verse 5 then. God will break you down forever. He will snatch you up and tear you away from your tent and uproot you from the land of the living. See, God knows what justice truly is. The righteous will see and fear, verse 6, and will laugh at him, saying, "Behold, the man who would not make God his refuge, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and was strong in his evil desire." This is how the righteous ought to respond in seeing those who do not think God is their refuge. How sad it is that we've trusted in the wrong thing. That when God is not our refuge, the only other thing we have to rely on are the things that go away, as Ecclesiastes says, as vapors. That they're here one day and gone the next, as James says. Verses 8 and 9. As for me, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the loving kindness of God forever and ever. I will give you thanks forever because you have done it, and I will wait on your name, for it is good, in the presence of your godly ones. And this is his response to what happens after Doeg reveals David's location. And notice that I think that this is what he's really writing to himself. That he knows that he is responsible for what has ultimately happened. Because he didn't tell Ahimelech what the truth of the matter was. That he was relying on his deception to get him through instead of God. But I think in seeing what happened, David has a newfound resolve. I am going to live. I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. That means that he's ready to start producing the olives. He's ready to start producing the fruit that God would ask of him. This is what happens when we remember that God is our refuge. We get to boast in the loving kindness of God. We get to understand that our deception does nothing but destroy. We know that God has a sense of justice. And that he will respond to that justice, especially to those who do not make him their refuge. And the righteous response, behold, the man who focuses on that which is fleeting, that which does not last, God is the one who lasts. God is the one in whom we must take refuge. Would it be better to build a house full of sticks for the coming hurricane, or to live in a cave? God offers the cave, and yet we think that our little bundle of sticks is enough to keep the hurricane at bay. And we must understand that this, those who think God is their refuge, must be alive and ready to produce fruit. And notice the peace that comes upon David after this has happened. And it would be easy to focus on what exactly has happened. That because of what David did, look at the fact that there are 85 men that are dead because of you. But God is his refuge. He knows that he has made a mistake, and he is going to live not making that mistake again. Now, David, just like any other man, is going to have his difficulties, even after this moment. But But the difference between David and Saul. Yes, for a moment, God stopped being David's refuge. And he felt like he needed to lie. He felt like he needed to deceive Ahimelech in order to get what he needed. But upon realizing his mistake, he went back to God. He understood that God was the one in whom he needed to find his refuge, even when he had made, such an egregious mistake. And that's the same for us. We make some pretty big mistakes. But God is always right there waiting for us to reach back out to him, to make him our refuge once again. The problem with the way the world thinks about things is that our morality, I say our general sense of morality, is fleeting. 30 years ago, or maybe perhaps even less, the things that we find the most comfortable, the most moral as a culture and as a society would not look the same as today. The majority is very fickle. When we focus on that being our sense of morality, well, it's a shifting sand. Do you know why you can't actually map out a path through a desert? Do you know you can't do that? And the reason why you can't do that is that after just days, 100-foot-tall sand dunes can be in a completely different location than they were days before. And so you can only really follow through a desert by knowing the stars. And yes, you can travel through the day, but you have to make sure you're staying on the straightest path possible. And then you reevaluate where you are at nighttime. Because that's the only way to know where you are. And it's the same with us today. When God isn't our refuge, we live in a constant world of shifting sand. And we think we've got our path all marked out. And then as people try to follow that path, they suddenly find themselves in the middle of a desert, the scorching heat of the day bearing down upon them, and no oasis in sight. God has to be our refuge. Tonight, when you all come back, we're going to talk about inner peace and how to achieve inner peace. But I'll give you a hint. Part of achieving inner peace, and perhaps the most important part, is to think of God as our refuge. That whatever's going wrong in life, whether it's by my own hand or by somebody else's, God has to be our refuge. This world is not going to make sense until we get that in our heads. Saul could not figure that out. And so all around him were enemies. All around him were those conspiring against him. All around him were the ambushes, just lying in wait to be sprung. We can't think like that. That's not the way that we're supposed to live our lives. We're supposed to live our lives remembering just who is in charge. We're to go through our life remembering that even if there is an ambush right around the corner, I know that I can trust in God. God may not save me from that ambush around the corner, but I know that at the end of days, that he will take me to where there are no more concerns, to where there are no more ambushes, to where there are no more worries about this life, my needs, those who would seek harm against me. None of those issues will be there. Because I've made God my refuge. And there is a time in which God will let us know that he can always be our refuge. There's a time in which he will always be our refuge. Sometimes that's a very hard lesson to get into our heads. It's easy to sit there and look at what the Bible says and say, yep, that's what the Bible says. I know that's what the Bible says. And then we don't act like it. David, days before, probably would have said God was his refuge, and then he turned around and lied to Ahimelech. And of course, David is replaying the mistake that so many have made before him. Even great people of faith like Abraham felt the need to lie in order to save his own skin. We have to remember that even when we make mistakes, God is our refuge. It's a lesson that's too difficult to learn on our own. You have to take what the Bible says and believe it. And that's far harder than just reading it like we've done today. If you need help believing that this morning, then we'd love to help. But you have to understand that without God, you are going to need help. Even once He is your refuge, sometimes we need a little bit of help. But the most important thing is to respond to Zion's call. That's all God is calling you to do, is to come and rely on Him for refuge. And so tonight we'll talk about how we use God's refuge to bring about inner peace. So I hope you'll come back and we'll talk about that as well. That's another topic that's easy to read about and discuss and say, yes, preacher, and then turn around and not fully understand how to implement that in your lives. If you need help this morning, whether you have already responded to the call and thus have perhaps fallen by the wayside like we saw David, or perhaps you're in the position of Saul and really have yet to think of God as your refuge, whichever way applies to you this morning, please take advantage of this opportunity as we stand and as we sing.